Mojo.
What is my name?
It's Mojo on XL 102.
GalaxyCon this weekend, Greater Richmond Convention Center, and we're lucky to be joined in studio by Brian O'Halloran. And I can remember in college sitting there watching, and I'm dating myself, Clerks. And this was like a time when basically, like, you didn't have the internet, you didn't have any of this. It was all my friends coming to me going, dude, you've got to see this movie.
Right, and they handed it to you on a VHS tape.
I still have.
Kids, ask your grandparents what that is. We actually had to leave the house to go get movies, and then be kind and rewind, and then return these movies.
We actually had
a fine.
We actually had a video rewinder. Remember those?
Yep. A separate thing for people who didn't want to ruin the head of their VHS.
Yeah, I think it was like 99 cents or something, like if you didn't rewind the movie and you took it back. So.
And you always had that look when they would open up the case from the actual clerk looking at you like, really?
So when you made that movie all these years ago, I hate to say it like that, but did you think it would have the impact all these years later that it has now? I mean, you're shooting a movie basically in black and white at that time, which was unheard of.
Right. I mean, and the black and white choice was literally just financial.
Yeah.
I mean, we just couldn't afford the lights to light up a convenience store that had fluorescent lighting with the proper lighting so that we all didn't look like we were coming from the Matrix with that green hue. But at the time when we were making it, we were just making something that we all enjoyed. It was all of ours first film. All the actors, for the most part, you know, Kevin's first film, first feature, Scott Mosier and our DP Dave Klein, it was all their first feature. And I just thought we're all just doing it on deferred payment, which means that if the movie was to be sold and he made some money off it, we would get paid for our services. But we all took the chance because we all just wanted to get this done. I auditioned as an extra. He liked what I did and then put me in the role of Dante. And then the guy who would have been Dante went on to play a different role in the movie. And so at the end, I just thought that I would have a previously mentioned VHS copy of the film to show to friends like, hey, look what I did this past spring with a bunch of people. Isn't this kind of hilarious? Because the kind of humor, the kind of subject matter from the original Clerks was nothing that you saw in mainstream movies especially. And I wasn't hipped to the indie movie world as heavily as, let's say, Kevin was and other people were. Like, I wasn't going into Manhattan to go to the Angelica to see this new wave kind of French film. Or, you know, me and my friends would go into New York City to go see the Hong Kong Film Festival to see a lot of Hong Kong films because it was a lot of martial arts involved, a lot of cool stuff like that.
Right.
And so to go into the independent film world, I didn't think it would ever get to where we are today.
You didn't think they'd be talking about years later, or spawned this many spinoffs and movies?
Correct. I mean, we went on, I mean, when the film got picked up and we were at Sundance and when it got picked up and then we went on and Kevin got the funding from Universal Studios to do Mallrats within this same universe of characters where references from the Clerks movie were made in the Mallrats movie, and then we went on to do Chasing Amy and Dogma.
I was just watching that a little bit ago, and like she was talking about the malls, she's sitting there talking with Holden. Like,
right,
every one of these films is interconnected.
Correct. And I always say that to new fans or fans who've been fans for many years who now have kids who are old enough to hear this kind of language and subject matter. I say, look, show them the films in the order that we made them. Show them Clerks, then Mallrats, then Chasing Amy, then Dogma, then Jay and Silent Bob, and then Clerks 2 and whatnot. Because there are ongoing references and jokes that carry on throughout the whole universe.
Yeah, and characters as well.
Yeah.
Who's the better Hicks, Gil Hicks or Dante Hicks?
You know what? It depends on your liking. I think Dante Hicks is the more pragmatic of all of them. Gil Hicks is more of the, hey, swarmy kind of, I'll take you out on a date to the cheese house. And then Grant Hicks is the news reporter from Dogma.
Right.
So he's more of a, like, buckle down, real, get a job, kind of, you know, kind of middle of the road kind of guy. And then we named him Sean Hicks, but it's not in the credits that way. But the TV executive from Chasing Amy.
Yeah. Were you and Matt Damon?
Matt Damon, right. So he's another Hicks that we always joke about as well. So out of the four, you know, obviously Dante gets the most love, and I think it's just because he's the most kind of pragmatic out of all of them.
So you were saying there's actually another Dante before they decided on you being
Correct.
Dante. I can't imagine that film without you or any of these films without you. You're such a great character. Like, your personality is amazing in those.
Well, thank you. I mean, well, he was casting some people that he had already been friends with, that he had grow up doing sketch comedy with and stuff like that in high school and college. So, but the name of the gentleman is Ernie O'Donnell, who eventually wound up as Rick Deris, the weightlifter guy. He was originally given the role of Dante. He wanted him to play it. And this was before auditions even started. So When I was auditioning, and I came down on the second night of auditions, and I had forgotten about it. To be honest with you, a month earlier, the owner of the theater that they were holding auditions out of had called me saying, hey, I thought you were coming down to audition. I'm like, oh, my God, I totally forgot. I went down there with this monologue. Anybody who has the 10-year anniversary edition of Clerks, that black boxed version that has the Clerks X on it. The extra DVD has the auditions on it. It's an awful audition. I did so many horrible
things. It feels so bad. I have that. I've never watched that.
Yeah, it's a great, there's a great documentary about it called The Snowball Effect. It's very funny.
Well, you know, at some point too, everything went to streaming and I kind of lost track of my DVDs.
Correct. And the art of seeing and watching extra, you know, either commentary tracks or, you know, stunt footage or stuff like that is become lost with streaming because people just want to see the movie and then binge on to the next thing or whatever. So, but what's fortunate about the fan base of the Viewers universe is we are a tactile group. We like to have collections. We like to have the actual, you know, DVDs on the shelf. And like, there's my View Askew collection right there. By the way, take so-and-so down. See, it's signed by all these cast members and stuff like that. You really can't sign your stream, you know. So for fans who like to have their movies signed, we've been fortunate enough that our fan base likes to physically have copies.
I want to say that's probably the View Askew movies are the only ones I haven't gotten rid of.
There you go.
See? Because we pretty much...
You are a prime member of that fandom, sir.
I've always been a fan. I have the comics. I have everything. I've always been a huge fan. I mean, I had a friend back in high school, Ryan, who was like, you've got to get into this. I know you're going to love it.
Well, big shout out to Ryan.
But it was, you know, it's great. And like, those are films that stand the test of time as well.
Well, thank you, man.
So, I mean, it's really, really, really cool.
Well, it's still relatable. I mean, the original film is about a generation who are overeducated, underemployed.
Yeah.
We still have this problem today.
Yeah.
And just today we have even higher, incredibly, horribly crippling debt that you get when you finish school now. So at least when we were going to school, our debt wasn't as bad as what it can be today if we were trying to do the same thing. So I think that's why it relates. Everybody has worked either a crappy, you know, clerking job or retail job, or they've been to an establishment where they've been given horrible service from these jobs.
Well, I think what I really appreciated back in the day, and I don't know another way to put it, but the dialogue was kind of highbrow.
It was. It was made you think. Thinking man, kind of blue collarish.
Yeah, it was like conversations I was having with my friends that I probably couldn't have with the normal guy I ran into.
Right. No, it's definitely nerddom. There's a lot of nerddom of different things. People who actually studied for the spelling test, things like that. No, I get it. And I also appreciate it, too. Like, that's the one thing about Kevin Smith. His writing is very verbose. He's very verbose and eclectic in his references sometimes. And the amount of dialogue he puts in certain paragraphs for a character, for an actor to speak is a lot. And I think one of the things that kind of got me the gig was the fact that I came from a stage background.
Right.
And when you're a theater actor, you need to know the entire script from beginning to end because there's not cut, stop, let me do this again in front of a live
audience. Yeah, there's not multiple takes when you're on stage.
No, there's no multiple takes. And I think that's one of the things that he grew some kind of security behind and confidence in is that at least I know this cat will be able to get an entire, hopefully all of my dialogue in within long takes. Like one of the first things that we shot for the film was the conversation that Dante has with Caitlin, when I drag her into the video store to discuss what's this I hear you're getting married. That's a 7-minute uncut scene when you watch it. It's just the camera straight on us going back and forth for 7 minutes. Like that's unheard of in most films because people feel, oh, there's no motion. There's no coverage. You know, now it's done with coverage to show some visual motion to keep the mind kind of entertained. This was just you guys looking in at an argument between a boyfriend and his ex-girlfriend kind of thing.
And especially on the budget you were on, it was probably perfect.
Yeah, we were on such a micro budget. I mean, we were all working for free, obviously. And where the money came from was they had like $4,000 from like when FEMA really worked. There was a nor'easter that blew through the Jersey Shore, and Kevin and Jay shared a car, like a VW Scirocco or something, that was up on blocks in his front yard that got literally washed out into the bay, and FEMA gave them like $4,000. Plus, Kevin had dropped out of film school, Vancouver Film School, took the rest of his tuition money to put towards the film, and then he applied for like 7 credit cards. This is when credit card companies...
I remember hearing this story. Yeah. Like, he left, and I think Scott stayed or something like that.
Right, exactly. Well, Scott and David stayed to finish get their degree. And so when they came down, when he was done with the script, sent it to them, they liked it. By the way, by actual mail, not by email. This was before emails and stuff. And then they said, look, we need to raise money. I think Scott's parents chipped in a couple of grand. Kevin's parents chipped in a couple of grand, and then the rest were all charged on 7 different credit cards. And it was the type of thing that he took a big risk and spent about $28,900 and something, whatever the exact number is. And we went up and we went to the first film festival, which was the International Feature Market, which is the IFFM, a feature film market in New York, which is a festival that doesn't exist anymore. Had one screening on the last day of the festival, which was Sunday at 11 a.m. or something like that.
Right.
It was a horrible time slot. 20 people in the audience, 12 of which were like us from the film. But we were fortunate by that a man named Bob Hawke was in the audience. Saw it, loved it, passed it around to his people, meaning you need to see this film. Amy Taubin from The Village Voice, which was like the leading entertainment paper, underground paper in New York City at the time, got a hold of it. And then it got to the Miramax people and Harvey and Bob Weinstein. But Harvey got up and walked out numerous times, didn't even want it, just so as we saw black and white. So then when Sundance came around, we had four screenings there. That was January of 94, and they were able to have Harvey finally sit down and see it with an audience and having the audience laugh behind it. He was like, all right, maybe we have something here, and then signed them to a deal. And so we were very fortunate enough that, and then we got paid after that, and we went on to go on forever with these characters, which I enjoy.
Which has gone bigger and bigger every time out.
And then, you know, we recently got to rekindle these characters again in the Jay and Silent Bob reboot that's been touring America with Kevin this past couple of
months. Yeah, he was just here a couple weeks
ago.
That's
right. That's right. And he's finishing up in the New Orleans area. That's where we actually filmed the film. And so now that he's done with all that, and it's going to be in the streaming media soon, and it's already out on DVD, so you can pick it up in your local retailer, we can hopefully maybe work on a Clerks 3.
So is that happening? Because
in theory, you know, we've agreed to want to watch, you know, to read the new script and go on board with it.
Now, I heard Jeff wasn't happy with the original script.
Correct. I mean, there was some issues. It was a very dark script.
Okay.
It's not very Clerk X-esque in the sense of, like, very ha-ha, slapstick, funny. It was very serious and dark, but it's still touching at the same time. We recently, about last year, I think it was like August or so, we had a staged reading of the script for a fundraiser at the theater that we all auditioned at for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
They needing to upgrade their lighting system and sound system.
You guys are trying to help out.
And we did. And they were needing to get $50,000 raised. We raised $25,000 that night. We had two screenings in the one day, a matinee and then an evening of this script. And so Kevin is like, this script's never going to be produced. It's too dark. It's not. This is before my heart attack, and I was in not the greatest of moods. And since then, now he's had a different look on life after his heart attack and his recovery. So now he said he's going to be working on that. Plus a Mallrats 2, from what I've heard as well.
So that kind of got shelved, didn't it?
Wasn't it did. What it was supposed to be, he wanted to make an actual movie. Universal said, no, we're not going to give you the rights to make a feature. But if you want to write some sort of episodic TV series, maybe we'll take a look at it. So he then came and wrote, I believe, a 10-episode treatment, to which he then shopped around to different networks and different streaming networks. No one said yes, but in TV, when you're shopping projects around, that doesn't mean it will never get done. It just means they don't have a slot for it, or they don't have a need for that type of genre in their on their channel or what have you. So as of right now, there's not a yes. But now I think Universal, seeing the success that the Jay and Silent Bob reboot distribution model of taking the movie from city to city personally and showing it in a roadshow atmosphere, has shown the profitability of it has gotten incredible. Like, Kevin made back the initial $10 million investment and then some within like half of the tour and now the other half. And now all this DVD and streaming money should be all nothing but profit. So with that now distribution model that he can do, I think Universal came back and said, well, maybe we can do a feature. So who knows? I'm hearing this all piecemeal from different people around the project. So I'm just waiting to get an email from Kevin soon. Hey, sending you the script, be on the lookout from FedEx or what have you.
So is that the return of Gil Hicks, or is there going to be a new character?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if you saw the Jay and Silent Bob reboot, you saw me play a couple of characters in that.
Okay.
So I'll see what happens with this new script.
Right on. So we got GalaxyCon coming
right
up. I got to ask you this before we get into that.
Sure, sure.
What does it feel like that these people come out to see you and still have all this loyalty to the characters that you play after all these years? I mean, they're still, they get revved up to come out and see you guys.
Well, first off, I'm blessed. I'm truly blessed. I mean, everybody from the Viewski universe, we are really blessed and really appreciate the fact, because we are fans as well of other genres and other things as well. Just yesterday, I was on the air with Sam Jones.
Flash Gordon.
Right. So Flash Gordon. So, you know, you have people here who are voiceover actors from, like, you know, Dragon Ball Z and, You have people here from so many different genres. I mean, you're going to have Gilbert Gottfried in town this weekend, you know, the voice of, you know, the parrot in Aladdin, plus many others. And just a
and the Affleck duck.
Yeah, and the Affleck duck, right. Yeah. And so then, you know, I find it very cool to hear the stories about how people, how this film really impacted them, changed their lives. Some people, I get a lot of that. People got into making their own films after watching our films, and that's awesome. And or people who's like, you know what, the Clerks 2 really touched me and made me solidify my friendship with my circle of close friends and how we really have each other when, in the end of it when it comes down to it. And so that type of thing I've always enjoyed. And coming to something like GalaxyCon and hearing these stories, it kind of validates to me that I'm doing something in the world that is a positive light to certain people.
Right.
Or, you know, especially service members. There are service members who are out of country who are in these patrols in Afghanistan or in Iraq or wherever they're stationed, and they're seeing some pretty heavy stuff out there. And they'll get back to camp, and someone will have it on in their, you know, in the PX or wherever, and
yeah,
have a movie to get their mind out of their patrol that they just had. Or sailors out on ship or in submarines, and they'll have it in their rack as they're watching it. And it's good to know that someone who's doing, who are real heroes,
right,
who are really putting their lives on the line, can get a little joy and entertainment out of something, out of some dick and fart jokes that me and my friends have done.
Right on. I always feel like Clerks is like the film of my generation.
Right on.
Like I really do. I feel like if I could identify from one film at that time, you know, people would say, well, like Forrest Gump or this or that.
I know. And
it's
And anybody wants to go on Google right now and type in films from 1994. Look at the monster load.
Oh, I know.
Incredibly.
Yeah.
Unbelievable films that
you had
came
Pulp
out.
Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
I mean, it was crazy.
Tons of great films came out on that year. It was
you had films that would have won Oscars
easy
if they had put out a year before or a year after.
Correct. And now that the list goes 10 deep when it comes to Oscar nominations, they would have been easily all 10 of them. You'd still be going like, oh, but what about so-and-so? You'd still be fighting to get certain films on there.
But those are like mainstream, you know, Hollywood films. There was just something about Clerks that was endearing.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
It was like a garage band of movies.
Yeah, it was like
this little find that you saw in a club. I'm like, dude, you totally got to see this band, Clerks. It's awesome.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
here's their bootleg CD.
I remember my like I said, my friend putting it on, and I'm like, what the hell are we watching?
Yeah.
Why is this
film
in black and white?
Off, right?
And he's like, well, they didn't have the budget. And like, he knew everything about it because,
right,
I mean, and you had to like do research then. It wasn't like grabbing your phone, hitting Google and going, what's the story on Clerks?
No, you had to find, you know, Premiere Magazine or Film Threat Magazine or something like that to catch up on, or Fangoria Magazine if you're a horror fan, things like that.
Right.
Yeah, you had to go and like, you know, go to your local Barnes & Noble and sit there secretly while reading all your magazines, not having to buy them.
Paying for overpriced coffee.
Right,
and,
exactly.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, it was that type of thing that's our fan base, that they do appreciate it that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, even music back in that time period was...
It was awesome.
It's this huge, huge, epic kind of alternative feel to it that just was taking over the mainstream.
One of the best scenes in Clerks is when he's late and he's getting the keys.
Yeah.
And he's walking out and Alice in Chains is playing when he's walking to the video store.
Right. And that's another thing. I mean,
the music's amazing.
The music was really great. The Miramax put in $1 million into the soundtrack and cleanup of the film in general.
Wow.
So we had a band called Love Amongst Freaks, which was a local band, who is it's the original song in the film, and they have another song on the soundtrack as well. But they did all the music for the film at first. And then when Miramax bought it, we said, no, we're going to do some cross-marketing with our music labels and stuff like that. And so Kevin and Scott were given this catalog of tons of bands and tons of songs to pick. And God love them. They picked out some really great bands and some really great songs to be a part of this.
All of the movies are like that, though. There's great music, and it seems like...
But now it's very costly. I mean,
it's very costly, but it's like, I don't know, but like, it just seems like the music they pick for the films is perfect at the perfect time.
Right, right. And that's the same thing even with all of Kevin's films. If you watch even Jersey Girl, things like that,
mm-hmm,
he always has been heavy with what he knows. He makes conscious decisions that reflect the story, that actually move the story along in a proper way with his music.
Right on. So GalaxyCon, it's happening, and
yes,
all 3 days you're there, right?
All 3 days. We have myself, we have Jeff Anderson, who will be there for Saturday and Sunday, and then we also have Jay Muses all 3 days. We also have Shannon Elizabeth, that's right, Boo Boo Kitty, you know what I'm talking about. She'll be there. And we also have Michael Rooker, who's there. He's there for a bunch of things. Obviously, Guardians of the Galaxy and also The Walking Dead. But
Mr.
He was also
Svenning.
Mr. Svenning, that's right, from Mallrats. So if you have your Mallrats, come on down. And also, because Gilbert Gottfried actually voiced – an episode of the Clerks cartoon for ABC, you could even get him to sign your Clerks animation CD because he was the voice of, funny enough, the horse, not the horse. Oh my God, the actor who passed away from Ghost.
Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze. He was Patrick Swayze. He came on with the voice of Gilbert Gottfried, but he was saying he was Patrick Swayze. It was hilarious. So come on out. There's so many things there. There's wrestling there. There's, you know, if you're into Funko Pops, there's so many vendors selling that. You have comic book artists. These artists that actually have created these superheroes are going to be there. And then we also have panels and the after parties. The building doesn't close on Saturday until 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So, you know, midnight every night is at least something going on at the convention center. We have gaming rooms if you're into video gamings, into Fortnite or Apex, whatever. We have 24-hour gaming rooms going on, table games as well. So if you can't find something to entertain yourself this weekend at this place, I don't know where you're going to go. You might as well just stay home and shut yourself in.
I just want to say what an excellent spokesman you are for Galaxy
Con. No,
thank you. Thank you, Brian, for being with us, and it's an honor to meet you today.
Not
really.
At all,
I'm
man.
A big
thank
fan.
You, Mojo, for having me on here, and thanks for the XL 102 audience for listening. And please, come on out this weekend. We'd love to see you. It's a rare event in general, and you'll have a blast.
What's my name?
It's Mojo.
What is my name?
It's Mojo on XL 102.